Go ahead on, Steve Cropper. And that's Donald Duck Dunn on the bass. Hold on, children, friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, just hold on. Ah, we got to hold on. All right, John. Welcome to Resistance Radio on Community Radio right here out of Shepherdstown, West Virginia. EnlightenRadio.org, Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle, Independent Community Radio. I'm Stuart Acuff, your host every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And with me today, as usual, is the founder, president, and chief chef of Epic Radio, John Case.
Woof, woof,
brother. John is engineering per usual on Wednesdays because I'm too damn dumb to figure out how to run all three of these computers at the same time.
That's the excuse that some people give for not engaging in the difficult work of computer science.
I'm too damn dumb and too damn old. But this is Resistance Radio. Friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, we got a real treat for you today. We got a great guest coming on here in a few minutes. Her name is Cassie Waters. She's a great organizer, lead organizer with United Campus Workers in Tennessee, organizing workers in the state university system, doing a great job down there. They're in a big fight, trying to raise wages and stop the wages from going down. They're trying to stop privatization. They got one of these right-wing governors wants to give the whole state over to the privatizers, and these folks are fighting hard to stop him from it. She's also going to talk with us today about this is International Women's Day, and it's the National Women's Strike. And John and I are both wearing red neckerchiefs, red bandanas, in solidarity with the women who are on strike today, in solidarity with women in general, and in solidarity with women who are leading the resistance. That's the other thing Cassie and I are going to talk about, which is how women have really stepped up in this resistance to Donald Trump, and how much leadership women are providing to this movement. And how much of the engine at the local level and at the non-engineered, the organic level, is coming from women. We're also going to talk a little bit about the latest Republican scam. You know, there's two or three a day. Right now, today, the latest Republican scam is their Boehner Care. What do they call it? Trumpacare, which is a total ripoff and will cost you and me thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars if we let them replace Obamacare with their ridiculous substitute, which is just a ripoff and a giveaway to the rich and to the insurance companies. So we're going to talk a little bit.
Well, can I interject something there?
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens is that the price of the health coverage is going to go up.
Yes, it is.
And then you're going to be given the choice to withdraw.
Right. But it's going to be your choice.
It's going to be your choice, your decision will be totally based on the fact that you just can't pay for it.
Right. But it's your choice.
But it's your choice.
It's your choice to be poor. It's your choice to live in poverty. It's your choice to be hungry. It's your choice to go without health care. Yeah. But it's your choice.
It's your kid's fault,
because, you know, if you weren't ready to have kids, why'd you have kids? And if you weren't ready to have kids, why did you have sex? Because everybody knows that sex is only for procreation.
Well, and if you're not going to have sex, well, the Nazi program of neuterization of people that shouldn't be having sex anyway seems totally appropriate.
Absolutely.
I mean, why should Jews need sex organs?
Right.
I mean, this is the infernal logic that...
Right. Of the Nazis.
Well, and...
Of which we have a few leftovers running this country.
It's just... We'll just call it that, you know, some guys that walked off the plank...
Yeah.
While in power, no less.
Right.
You know, they called themselves Nazis. But, you know, I want to tell you, friends and neighbors, there's a plank out there with other names on it.
Yeah.
And walking it has the same consequence. Yeah, when you go to hell, and if you're the president of the company, guess who falls down the mountainside with you? The rest of the people.
Everybody
goes to hell together.
Everybody at that company goes.
As Abraham Lincoln said, when the offense of slavery finally reached God's ears, he rendered a judgment that rained hell on both North and South.
Right. In the second inaugural.
Yes, I'm just rephrasing.
If God ordains every drop of blood drawn by the lash shall be repaid by blood drawn by the sword, then God's will be done. Direct quote from Abraham Lincoln.
I borrowed that quote in a letter to the Baltimore Yearly Meeting.
Oh, yeah?
Which is above the... They have a peace and social justice.
Whoa, slow down now.
The Quakers are organized into meetings. You know, they sometimes have a monthly meeting, which is
and
like
John is a very big Quaker.
Well, I'm just 200 pounds, but anyway. And then you have little worship groups, you know, which are informal. And then you have like quarterly meetings, which meet four times a year. And then you have an annual meeting, which is, you know, a covering a whole area. Baltimore covers the Mid-Atlantic,
right?
Anyway, they're having a conference, and they're gonna have workshops on peace,
right?
On immigration, okay? On prison reform, and I think some other thing. And I sent them a letter. I said, well, my suggestion is you add a workshop on democracy, because without it, all these other issues are going to be, if I may use a metaphor, ashes and sand and blood productions.
Right. Exactly.
And
exactly.
So, you know,
there ain't no peace and justice without democracy, brothers and sisters.
Because otherwise we don't settle it with you know, debate and argument and consensus or majority rule. We settle it with pitchforks and guns,
right.
You know.
Right. And knives and fists.
And whatever's available.
Right. Whatever's available.
Pick up a rock or a stone.
Yeah. And so we're going to talk about some of the things that you will lose from Obamacare if the Republicans are able to switcheroo their Trumpacare. And we're going to talk about that later in the program. But it's been a big week for the resistance, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors. Trump tweeted Saturday morning implicating himself in criminal activity, that he had been wiretapped by President Obama. Well, we all know that there's only two ways you can get a wiretap. Doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States. One is that you get the foreign influence. I forgot the name of it. The FISA court. John, I got a call here.
Maybe somebody's trying to call in and they don't know how to do it.
Cassie?
Hi.
Okay, well, Stuart's talking to Cassie. Who's going to be our guest here on the thing. She's
to the station.
She's got a call.
804-885-0708.
There you go. She's got the number now.
Okay.
And I'm waiting for a call. I got it set up so that my little phone will answer right here on the air.
Great. Well, that was Cassie. She's calling in. Apparently, I forgot to tell Cassie to call into the studio rather than to my phone.
There
that
you go.
Would be on me.
Okay, there you go.
Which,
okay.
Somehow I'm not shocked that I did that.
Another rock you're going to have to carry up the mountain here, right. Stuart.
Exactly. This is Cassie calling now. Cassie?
Good morning.
Good morning.
There you go.
You are on the air, sister. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Stuart?
I'm doing great. It's always a joy to hear your voice, and looks like Looks like I've heard your voice two or three times this week. It's always a pleasure. Y'all got your hands full in Tennessee, don't you?
I'll say. We got our own homegrown billionaire we're up against.
Cassie, let's introduce you a little bit. Help me out. Now, Cassie's a young friend of mine. We go back 15 years, probably, Cassie?
Back to sounds right.
When you worked for Jobs with Justice, and now Cassie is the lead organizer of United Campus Workers, an affiliate of the Communication Workers of America, organizing campus workers across Tennessee at Tennessee State Universities and building a grassroots union from the bottom up. And I'm so proud of what y'all are doing. It's great work y'all
Thank
are doing,
you.
Cassie. Yeah. Yeah. Did I get your bio about right?
Yeah. That's right. And, you know, I'm from Oklahoma, so just a couple states to the west, which I like to say.
And there's a lot of former Tennesseans who moved to Oklahoma, some voluntarily mm-hmm. and many forced to move. I met a great poet in Oklahoma. She is also a publisher of poet, Janetta Calhoun Mish, and she called her publishing house Mish Mongrel Publishing. And that's because, like me, so many people in Oklahoma are of mixed heritage and mixed racially. White people, Indian people, American Indian people, African American people. There's a lot of what I call myself mongrels in Oklahoma, right, Cassie?
There really are, and then in my generation, also Latinos and Asians and mixed races.
Yeah, where'd you grow up at?
Oklahoma City, OKC.
Man, I spent the longest 10 years of my life one summer in OKC. We were trying to stop privatization. This was year 2000. It was a long, hot summer in Oklahoma City. So, how has union building been going? I want to get into the issue, but how has union building been going? Are you all, you feel like you're making progress in building your union? You feel like you're spreading out across the state? How's it going?
We definitely are. We're on every public campus in the state. And despite major upheavals by the governor in his administration, and that's Bill Haslam, who has passed a lot of legislation and initiated it that attacks state employees and that destabilizes higher education. But despite that, despite being right to work, at-will employment, no payroll deduction, you name it, we are growing. And so our union is an example of what may come to pass, and I hope it doesn't, but that it is possible when you don't have anything to build something, because we often feel when these attacks are happening, you know, we don't have that to lose.
Right.
You can't take it away from us because we don't have it.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, you have a lot to teach the rest of us. I feel like some of the lessons we learned when I was doing the same thing you're doing now in Georgia, there's a lot of lessons in that for other people. But, you know, fundamentally,
that's right. We learned a lot from our sister union in Texas, Texas State Employees Union, that's also a CWA affiliate. And so we're up to 1,700 members in the state of Tennessee.
That's great. That's great. That's a big union.
That's right.
Tell us what's happening in your fight with the governor real quick.
We are over a year and a half now into a fight to save up to 10,000 jobs from being privatized by our governor, who established the Office for Customer-Focused Government and hired some private sector people to lead a process that's known as vested outsourcing, which means that companies are at the table from the very beginning drafting the bid that they will then bid on. And so it's the most insider and shadowy, radical process of outsourcing that we've ever encountered, and on a scale that we've never heard of. So this is facilities management, and that's everybody who takes care in any way of a state-owned facility. And they will not say how many people could be affected, but it's between 3 and 10,000 by our count. And we think it's more like 4,000 just in higher ed if you're including all the jobs. And so the scope of this is statewide, but really it feels like they've got their eyes much bigger than that. So this is only the beginning. This could spread to other states. And so this vested outsourcing model is rearing its head, and the governor claims it's to save taxpayers money and make government more efficient, and that's in line with other things that he has done, such as take away the pension for state employees and turn it into more like a hybrid plan, more like a 401k, take away longevity pay for state workers, excluding higher ed. And so this is part and parcel that it's just much, much bigger than anybody could have imagined. And so we exposed this initially in August of 2015, and that was the first time that legislators or the media had heard about it.
Wow.
And so it's really because of our members taking action, holding signs, rallying, right?
Right.
Having people sign petitions for the last year and a half. It's the only reason anybody knows this is even happening. And so on Thursday, we are going to Nashville because that's the first day of interviews with these three final companies. And those are Jones Lang LaSalle, Compass, and Aramark. And we want to expose this process, and we want it to halt immediately.
You know, Cassie, Nashville is the state capital of Tennessee. I mean, listening to me, you might have actually thought Memphis was the state capital of Tennessee, but no, Memphis is the state capital of Mississippi. Nashville's the state capital of Tennessee.
That's right. There are three grand divisions,
and each one has a capital city in it. Knoxville in the east, Nashville in the middle, and Memphis in the west. Only Memphis is the capital of Mississippi. Cassie is a good friend of mine. She had me down a couple years ago to speak on Dr. King Day and to ride around with her and raise some hell in eastern and middle Tennessee. And I just had a great, great time. She's a great organizer, has been for a long time, and just really proud of her as my friend, and proud of her work as a young, excellent, excellent organizer. It's fun to watch as the craft of organizing has changed over the years, and more women have reached higher levels in organizing, to watch as more and more organizers are young women, and as more and more young women are running organizing staffs. And now, on this radio and around the country, we're seeing more and more women running the resistance to Trump. I mean, the first action was a huge action, and it was the Women's March the day after Trump was inaugurated, where we swamped women and the men who followed the women, like me and John, and we swamped Trump, and we swamped his inauguration. It was a great, great day. But today is the women's strike on International Women's Day, and women are standing up to Trump all over America. We want to salute them. John and I are wearing our red bandanas around our neck to show solidarity with women, and women are walking out of work, and women are shopping at women, and men are shopping at women-owned business, and we just are trying to highlight the role of women in our society. We cannot lose the fact that women have been one of the primary objects of Donald Trump's scorn, neglect, and his disdain. And so it is altogether fitting and proper, as Abraham Lincoln would have said, altogether fitting and proper that women are leading this resistance. Right, Cassie?
I think that's right. I think that's right. And there are women in our union leading this resistance in our fight against outsourcing as well.
Yep. Well, let's just say this real plainly, because I'm hoping you're going to be able to use the podcast that John's going to put this interview into in Tennessee. But let's just say this. Privatization is a ripoff. It is a ripoff of the citizens. It is a ripoff of the workers. Privatization exists to take public assets and give them to the private sector. Literally give them to the private sector. And
that's
so
right.
So that these leeches are able to take public funds and put them into private bank accounts and get rich off the taxes that the rest of us have to pay.
That's exactly right. And that's what everybody immediately understands about this process that we face. It did not take a rocket scientist to see right through it.
Right, right. So I had to step out for just a 10 seconds, and I may have missed this earlier in the conversation. What is Thursday, and what are y'all going to do on Thursday?
We're taking busloads of members and students and allies. And when I say members, that's our members who could be affected directly by this privatization. And so that's people who work in facilities and physical plant departments on campuses. And then faculty members and staff members who also work on these campuses and understand that, right, this is coming for them next. And so they've got to stand together with these workers. We've got community allies, faith leaders joining us. And we will be going to our Capitol to send a message to our legislature that we need them to stand up. Many of them have been supportive of us, because this process did not initiate with them, and it currently does not involve them. This is an executive branch process only, and so we want to ask them to stand up and stand with us and put a stop to this. We are also going to be marching over to the Tennessee Tower, the Snodgrass Tennessee Tower, a large state office building where the Office of Customer-Focused Government and the Central Procurement Office are, where these interviews with these corporations will be taking place. And we'll be shining a light on that process that absolutely no one is aware is going on except for us calling attention to it. And that's just wrong. It's anti-democratic. This outsourcing, we know, is both bad for our economy, it's bad for our democracy, the way that this is happening. And so we're trying to send a message to our elected leaders in the House and in the Senate and our state that we need them to stand strong with us and put a stop to this immediately.
You know, let's talk a little bit about privatization in the academic field, in the education field, in the education sector of the economy. You know, for me, privatization in education really started with George Bush, when he privatized the National Student Defense Loan and the Pell Grants and turned what had been a 3% government loan, which is how I went to college, that and work study and working in the summers, and he turned it into a 7% bank loan, a huge giveaway to the richest and most powerful people in the world, in the history of the world, at the expense of the of kids from working class and middle class households trying to get an education so they can have a secure employment in their life. And now he charged 7%, and the interest on those student loans is costing us $1 trillion in this economy. And it is literally saddling young people, 22 years of age, of up to $100,000 of debt. Because of privatization.
That's
privatization of the
That's
money.
That's right.
And now, you know, there are some things that the rich people ought not to be able to make money off of. There mm-hmm. are some things that ought to stay in the public sector just because they are a public good and they are a requirement for democracy. And one requirement for democracy is an educated citizenry. That's why Betsy DeVos is so dangerous, because she doesn't believe in public education. And that's why privatization of Tennessee colleges and universities is so dangerous, because without an educated citizenry, you cannot have democracy, because the people can't run their government if they don't know what in hell is going on.
That's right. That's right. And what we say, I mean, we feel a lot of affinity with, you know, when low-wage workers stand up, like with the Fight for 15. And so we've had, right, our adjuncts in our, especially community colleges.
Well, now, wait, whoa, Cassie, now tell everybody what an adjunct is, because everybody don't know what an adjunct is.
In the hierarchy of academic labor, they're almost on the bottom. They're just above graduate students. And so it's typically...
they're professors, though,
state,
right?
They're considered part-time, but often they're working more than full-time. And so they are not on a tenure track like a full-time instructor is. They are kept at the bottom rung, and they teach the most classes for the least amount of money. And you see institutions balancing their budgets on adjuncts' backs by creating more and more adjunct positions, but not replacing the full-time faculty position. So it's the same, you know, temporary part-time labor scam that we see elsewhere.
Yep, yep. And so you were making a point about adjuncts when I interrupted you.
That's okay. Well, so just as an example of what you're talking about, that's how we see it as well. It's, you know, we like to say, from no degrees to PhDs, this economy isn't working. We all need a living wage. And so we definitely have a lot in common across the board, and that's why our union is open to anybody across campuses, staff, faculty, student, employees. And so... Right, we have a different vision, and it is one that is opposed strongly to privatization. Our state government has defunded higher education millions and millions of dollars, especially during the recession, and they will never replace that money. And so that's when you see things like a rise in adjuncts, a rise in part-time temporary faculty labor, as well as a push to outsource and supposedly save money, even though we know it makes costs actually go up.
Yep. Well, it's what happens when you make a Republican the executive, the chief executive of a government, and you surround him with a Republican legislature, a Republican parliamentary body, like the Congress of the United States. It just allows them to implement their harebrained schemes that are just designed to rip off the rest of us, and to transfer more and more money and to redistribute more and more money from working people, working Americans, working families, the poor, seniors, the middle class, to those who are already wealthy. And I'm just really proud of UCW for standing up and fighting back and fighting strong and taking it right to the governor, taking it right to the Capitol, and taking it right to the office, whatever office it is that's going to be interviewing these corporations and deciding which one's going to get the contract. Let me just point out a little irony, because I spent 15 years organizing in Georgia. And that is, I'll bet you You said the three finalists were Compass, Aramark?
Yes.
Aramark and then one other. I didn't know the other one. I do know Compass and Aramark. And I will tell you that when they operate in the north, like in Philadelphia, where I was national organizing director for 1199, they work union. And they're happy to work union. And they don't try to bust the union. And they negotiate decent contracts. In fact, they in the hospitals in Philly, they negotiate good contracts. People are able to work a semi-skilled job or even an unskilled job in Philadelphia, be a member of the union, and live a middle-class lifestyle. The Hospital Workers of Philadelphia is one of the anchors of the black middle class. But I'll bet you I know that Aramark and Compass, either which one of them gets the contract, they're going to try to bust the union. They're going to try to work non-union. I can guarantee that.
That's right. That's right. And we continue to undersell our state and our people to these international corporations with huge tax breaks, as well as a promise that not only will they pay next to nothing in taxes, that the low-wage labor force they're going to be greeted by is all too happy to work for poverty wages. And that's right. What needs to change in our state and across the South.
Right. And across the South and across the country now, because as you know, Cassie, we've gone four decades, 40 years in America without a raise for working class people. 40 years
That's
right. of flat-lined wage stagnation.
That's not entirely true. We got a raise amounting to a little bit of spit in about 1997.
Yes.
But then it went away.
Right. Right. A little bit of spit, John says. then it went away. Their money has kept on going up. Their money's kept on going up. Their percentage of the take of the GDP has kept on going up. And ours has flatlined for 40 years. A lot of that has to do with the repression and the assault on the American labor movement. And that's why I'm so proud of organizers like Cassie and her colleagues who are breaking into new turf for union organizing. Because in Tennessee, public sector workers, they don't have the right to collective bargaining. They don't have the right to union recognition. They don't have a law telling the employer what he or she can do and cannot do. This is organizing by wit and grit. You got to have a lot of grit to hang on. That's why we played Hold On, I'm Coming by Sam and Dave out of Memphis, Tennessee. Stax Music this morning opening up. Hold on! UCW right. is coming. So
that's right. I was listening to Eddie Kendricks Keep On Trucking earlier.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There you go. So you got to have the grit to hold on if you're organizing for the United Campus Workers, if you're a union member in Tennessee, and you got to have the wit to win. And this demonstration that y'all are pulling on Thursday shows that kind of wit, and I'm so proud of y'all for doing it. I know I've heard, now I'm not going to ask you to go into any detail, I hear that y'all's demonstration is causing all kinds of headaches in Nashville. The bosses don't know what to do about it, and everybody's getting worried about it. And, you know, we don't like militancy in our capitals or at our state capitals, but doggone it, it's time to represent working folks, and it's time to fight. We've had a class war declared on us for four decades, actually 70 years or more. And it's time we take the fight back to the other side. And that's what Cassie and them are doing right now. And that's
right. People are taking their own time, taking a day off of work to come to the Capitol. We don't have leave time, right? We don't have any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a sacrifice that people are willing to make because they're ready.
Kelsey, this is John Case. Question, what's the, on the campuses, how are the faculty overall reacting to this? I mean, is there support? Are they divided, very divided? How are they expressing themselves, if they are?
Without fail, there is support. And so
that's great.
You see faculty senates passing resolutions and efforts by some of our leaders among faculty to circulate letters to the decision makers on campus. Because what we have forced the governor to say is that each campus could decide for themselves. And so faculty have really stood up and stood with workers strongly, because they see what has happened, especially on campuses where they have tried to outsource. And the quality goes down, and it's not a mystery why, because people have part-time hours, poverty wages, right? And so you have to go through a middleman to get anything done. And so the evidence is all there. We've had no problem with faculty standing up with these affected workers.
That's great. That's great. And that is counterintuitive for some of the Trump supporters. Contrary to what some of the Trump supporters believe, faculty are not all elites who don't care about working folks. More and more members of faculty understand that they are working folks and are not part of the ruling class, which people and faculties often believed 50 years ago. It's not no longer true, though, is it, Cassie?
That's no longer true. That's right. And, you know, they feel the same kinds of pressures in a different way. And, right, the smarter among them realize this is coming for them. It right. not only indirectly affects them, it directly affects them, because this trend will, they are not immune to this trend.
Right.
And so the ones who realize that are the ones speaking the loudest.
That's great. That's great. Well, I hope there's going to be some faculty folks at your rally on Thursday. I hope that some of them may even get to speak on Thursday.
They're very much in the forefront of actually raising money so that we can have more buses full of members going to Nashville. And so there's actually been a lot of activity, especially from a member leader at UT Knoxville. And so I think we'll definitely see faculty standing up to the very end about this issue.
Great. That's great. Hey, you know what? The foundation of our power is solidarity. The way we
exactly.
operate is solidarity. You know, I like to say, when I'm making a talk, that it is organizing that makes us most human, because we exist to teach people how to win with one another, not by ratting anybody out, not by climbing over anybody's shoulder, not by pushing anybody aside, but by linking arms and everybody raising their living standards and their security and their children's security and their children's quality of life together. And that's what UCW is doing in Tennessee right now.
That's right. That's how we have to do it.
Right.
And that's how we will continue to do it.
Yep. Well, Cassie, let me let's get back to the do you want to say anything more about privatization and Thursday?
I'm good.
Okay.
I can, but I'm good.
Okay. Well, you know, feel free to if you want to say more about it. And I do want your thoughts on the, since this show is all about the resistance against Trump, I do want your thoughts as a Southern woman, Oklahoma and Tennessee, and that makes you about as Southern as they get. I do want your thoughts as a Southern woman, union organizer, on the resistance to Trump. What do you think? How do you see it?
Well, it's an interesting question for me, because living here, right, I mean, we certainly do have members who voted for President Trump and members who are affected by this current outsourcing process. And what I think is important is that we go hard on these issues that affect folks at the bottom. And that's what we're doing with this fight against the outsourcing. By the way, the name of our campaign is Tennessee is Not for Sale, and we do have a Facebook page by that name that I ask people to follow. And so,
Wait. Ahead. You got something people need to get. You got a Facebook page that's called what?
Tennessee is Not for Sale.
Okay, is Tennessee so spelled out?
TN is Not for Sale.
TN, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee, TN, that's the two-letter abbreviation for Tennessee. TN is Not for Sale. Go on your Facebook page and click on and get Tennessee is Not for Sale and friend my folks, friend my friends, and friend my folks in Tennessee.
That's right.
And so
I've been laser focused on this fight because it does feel so important. And it also, I believe, has the potential to get people in the room who we may not all agree on all of these issues, but what we do agree on is the need to stand up for ourselves and fight back against privatization. And that's an important starting point for other things in the future. And so our union is going to go hard on this, and I believe that we can win. And then from there, we'll see what's possible. We could change, we could turn things around in our state in any number of ways. And I believe that doing that here in the South is very key to changing the rest of the country.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. It's been a long understood formula that to raise wages in America, we have to start in the South, because the South is the drain at the bottom of the tub that drains out all the water that are good wages across America. So the work that y'all are doing in Tennessee is so critically important. And the work that your members are doing, the work standing up, the work paying dues, the work talking to other workers, the work putting their necks out, the work governing how they live, and their and the work of committing themselves to a more just workplace and a more just society by unionizing. It's a wonderful thing.
That's right. And a campus is a really unique place to have that kind of solidarity and community building. And so when facilities workers see faculty and students standing up and standing with them, that means something. That's not nothing. And so they may not agree about everything, but that solidarity is the thing that's going to be able to change and build relationships.
That's right. And you will win on this fight. I mean, one thing I learned fighting privatization at the state level in Georgia and at the city level in Atlanta, and we won both of those fights, was the more people know about privatization, the more they realize it's a ripoff, and public support for privatization just drops when it finally gets through to people that it's simply a way to transfer our wealth, publicly held wealth, publicly held assets, and give them to rich people. Simply give them away. It doesn't save money. It doesn't increase efficiency. It doesn't increase service delivery. In fact, it does the opposite of all those things. There are things in America that nobody ought to be able to make money off of. In the public good, the Commonwealth, all that we share together. And as we educate our young people and take care of the sick and do and provide for safety and do all the things that public employees do, keep the infrastructure running, fix the highways because we can't get an infrastructure bill in to build new highways. So we got to fix the highways and plow the snow in the wintertime. And all that we have to do, and in Tennessee, you have all those beautiful lakes and all the beautiful scenery. Sometimes I just miss Tennessee when I think about it and talk about it. But those are all taken care of by public employees. And
that's exactly right. Then state parks are affected by this plan as well.
I'm sure they are. You know, replace a park ranger with somebody to cut the grass. Mm-hmm. You know, well, there goes the assistance to the campers and the visitors of the park. There goes the public safety functions of a park ranger, and just cut that position, save some money, get somebody to cut the grass instead. That's what we're dealing with.
And make them into corporate retreats, right? Corporate lodges.
Yeah. Then there's going to be a new horror movie series come out.
Yeah.
Incidents at Trump Park. Ghouls hanging out unsupervised by their masters.
Ghouls hanging out. Somebody was writing me, Mike Elk, a really great labor reporter, he was writing me about an assignment he had in Mississippi and asking me what he should see while he's in Mississippi. I said, well, there's a lot of ghosts in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. A lot of ghosts in Mississippi, and there's a fair amount of ghosts in Tennessee, too. Now, those of you who don't know, I'm originally from Obion, Tennessee, a little town that used to have 1,500 people in it. I expect it's got less than 1,000 in it now. 100 miles north of Memphis on Highway 51. That's my original home before my family moved across the river to the Boot Hill of Missouri. And so Tennessee has a very, very special place in my heart, and I just love this little union that Cassie and Thomas and all those folks down there are building. I'm proud of Cassie and her colleagues. They all young people down there are doing this thing, and they're doing the Lord's work. They're seeking justice and righteousness and peace, and they are an important, very important part of the labor movement. Now, you're going to get this as a podcast, Cassie, and I hope you use it with your folks. And so if there's a Tennessee State employee listening right now, and this is the altar call.
Altar call.
John, can you put a little organ music on? That's a little loud, John. I was thinking more.
With the cross of Jesus
going on before. I was thinking more like just as I am. Anyway, if there's a state employee in Tennessee listening to this broadcast, and you haven't found the time yet or made the time to pay your dues and fill out your membership card to the campus workers, United Campus Workers of CWA, now's the time to do so. You know, Jesse Jackson once said to me, we were at a big meeting, and he did a similar altar call for people to join Rainbow Push, and he said, folks were a little bit slow, and he said, Jesse said, you can't ride to heaven in George Bush's Cadillac. And so it takes all of us, brothers and sisters. I know that that little bit of money means something to you. It's important to you. But so is your dignity. And so is self-respect. And so is the future you're creating for your children. They mean more than the almighty dollar. Yes.
That's right.
Yes. And we are called to do right by our fellow person. We are called to feed the sheep. We are called to lift up the weak and to help the poor and downtrodden. And that means joining your union.
Okay, I got a quiz for you.
Okay. By the way, Laura Marquardt just texted me. Hey, Laura, says, great show today. Hook me up with Cassie. So, Cassie, I'm going to be hooking you up with my friend Laura Marquardt. She was on 2 weeks ago. We still have to get her podcast to her, John, if you still have that tape somewhere.
I thought I sent it to her. I did send it to her.
Oh, you did? Okay,
yeah.
Good. Well,
If I didn't, I'll let me know, because
I haven't seen it.
I finished it, and I posted it, and I sent
you
her
did?
A link.
You posted it?
Yes, I posted that one, yeah.
Okay, all right, okay. So, well, what else?
Well, I had a quiz.
Oh, John's got a quiz. I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
Why should the shepherd go find the lost sheep when, in fact, in doing so, the rest of the sheep may wander off? Why would he do that?
Because every sheep matters to the shepherd.
Matters?
Yes.
What good does it do him if he goes and hunts for the sheep and the rest of his sheep head over the hill to the?
Well, what good does it do him if he doesn't hunt for the sheep?
He has one less.
He has one less, but that sheep is precious to the shepherd. It's not just one sheep.
I always had a different answer to this riddle, because I was never satisfied by the shepherd that was super dedicated. I always felt that instead he had to have some of the sheep in him and say, well, every sheep matters. Someday will be lost.
Oh, heavy duty, John. Heavy duty. Well, you know why you don't understand that parable.
Because I'm a Quaker.
Because you're a little wishy-washy on Jesus, and the shepherd is Jesus, and Jesus cares for every soul.
Well, actually, there was a criticism of Jesus by Peter's wife.
Peter wasn't married.
I'm sorry.
But go ahead.
Sure he was. They were all married, informally or formally. So he says, lay down your nets and go become fishers of men. Okay.
Right.
And his wife says, hey, who's bringing the fish home for dinner tonight for your stupid children? I'm editing, obviously. But yeah.
You're totally editing. I mean, I'm going to have to whoop out my book of theology on here and whoop John upside the head. Well, Cassie, we're going to let you go. Is there any last thing you got to say? So I'm going to hook you up with Laura Marquardt as soon as the show's over. I'll email both of you, and you'll have each other's email address. She is an organizer with the American Association of University Professors. She may have a way to help you out.
That'd be great.
But we want to make these connections happen right here at Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, right here on Resistance Radio with Stuart Acuff every Wednesday at 10 a.m. What? So you get the last word, Cassie, and we'll be out of here in a little bit.
Tennessee is not for sale. Follow us. These next couple months are crucial. But we're in it for the long haul, so stay tuned for some solidarity.
Great. Cassie Waters, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, great organizer, young woman, great friend. Cassie, I'll see you soon. Call me when the demonstration's done on Thursday, okay, before you get drunk.
Will do, brother. Love you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Love you, too. Thank you, Cassie.
Thanks, John. Take care.
That's been Cassie Waters, great young organizer in Tennessee United Campus Workers. So I just wanted to finish with this one thing, which is the Republican bill to replace Obamacare, so the Trumpacare, according to Jared Bernstein, would lead to millions losing coverage due to the repeal of the Medicaid expansion and to lowering the subsidies available to moderate and low-income households. The key disconnect in the Republicans' bill is that tax credits are no longer tied to the cost of coverage. So paying for health coverage will mean more out-of-pocket cost than under Obamacare. Republicans turn Medicaid financing into a per capita cap. So it's no longer whatever it takes to cover the poor people who are on Medicaid. Each state will get a block grant, or what we used to call a block grant. And all of their Medicaid coverage has to fit under that block grant, which means that poor people with cancer are going to lose their coverage because it's too expensive. The bill ends employer and individual mandates, which means it's going to be impossible to pay for because insurance is paid for by healthy people. And if they don't have to join, too many won't, and it'll be impossible to pay for. The plan targets Planned Parenthood by disallowing Medicaid reimbursements. Y'all, this is simply an attack on women. because Planned Parenthood does much, many, many, many more things for women than just providing abortions. And so it's an assault on women. It falls right in with the Republican, what used to be a drift, but now it's a headlong charge towards fascism. It's part of the Trump charge towards fascism. And the question is, and the whole country is waiting on this answer, and we will provide the answer. You and me and folks like you and me all over America will provide the answer. And the answer will be whether or not the Republican leadership, the leadership of the Republican Party, allow themselves to be dragged in the wake of the charge towards fascism. And if they do, and there's every sign that they're going to right now, although we can turn it around with our action and with our reaction and with our resistance. But every sign right now is that the Mitch McConnells of the world and the Ryans of the world and the right-wingers of the world, in fact, have been closeted fascists. And they've been waiting for the leader like Donald Trump, who wasn't and isn't closeted, but wears his fascism on his sleeve. And out of that man's chest beats an evil heart. Folks, this has been Resistance Radio with Stuart Acuff every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Next Wednesday, we're going to have another young woman organizer, Bree McShane from Virginia. She's already signed up to be on next Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Bree McShane, very, very interesting young woman, organizing in the education field and building community support for organizing workers. Folks, keep your fists in the air for the rest of the day. Wear red. Solidarity with women. Thank you to the women for leading the resistance. This has been Stuart Acuff and John Case signing off of Resistance Radio. God bless you. Love y'all.
Can't see nothing coming up behind.